What can you tell me about where the bill is, what its chances of are passing? I mean, because Democrats now, they control the Senate, and obviously President Obama can veto anything that he doesn't like, and I assume he does not like this proposal. So does it have a real chance of passing?
Well, the House is obviously going to take action, and the administration prior to the House taking action has issued what is referred to as a SAP, which is a Statement of Administrative Position on the bill. And in that SAP, the administration has indicated that senior management would propose to the president that he veto the House bill if it remains as it is and it passes through the Senate. I think the chances of it passing through the Senate, as the House will likely pass it, are very minimal. The Senate clearly has a different approach to this. And honestly, it should have a different approach. Look, we're dealing with some serious concerns here. In the state of Alabama, you've got 35% of your youngsters who are obese or overweight. You've got 25% of your youngsters who live in food insecure homes. And those youngsters receive somewhere between a third and a half of their calories during the school year in schools. And so it's important for us, for their future, for the country's future, to make sure they're the best students they possibly can be, to make sure that they don't have chronic diseases in their adult years that will increase health care costs for all of us, and that we have enough young people fit for military service so that we can maintain an all-volunteer service. It is important that we address this issue. And the reality is that experts establish these standards. This is not a situation where the folks at USDA sort of sat in a room and came up with this. This is about dietitians and nutrition experts and pediatricians coming up and saying, here's what a balanced, nutritious meal ought to include. It ought to include more fruits and vegetables, more low-fat dairy, and more whole grains. It ought to have a whole lot less sodium, sugar, and fat. And that's why 19 past presidents of the School Nutrition Association, the American Academy of Pediatricians, the American Medical Association, the PTA, a wide variety of other institutions and groups believe that we're on the right track and that we're taking a step forward. The House proposal would take a step back.
Now, what exactly is it that you are opposed to in this proposal? And that's one of our legislators, Representative Robert Adderholt, who is sort of out front on this issue, and he's saying that he's visiting schools and that it's just not working. And what he's proposing, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what it is a temporary waiver for schools who can prove that this is harming them financially.
Right. Well, first of all, 84% of Alabama schools are certified and actually operating under the new standards. So I appreciate that the chairman is going to schools, but obviously there are a limited number of schools now in Alabama that are not certified. 84% of them are certified, so the majority, vast majority of schools are complying with the standards. Secondly, the waiver is not workable. I don't really believe that anyone wants the United States Department of Agriculture to go into schools and begin auditing and looking at the books of each and every school that is claiming that they're not having the ability to meet these standards because of financial concerns. That's what this rule and this waiver would require, and it's not workable in that respect. Third, I think it sets the stage for what some people would like to see, which is a reversal and a sort of rolling back of these standards when we reauthorize the nutrition programs in the next Congress. So there are many reasons why this isn't a good idea. One is that a majority of schools, vast majority of schools across Alabama and across the nation are already complying with the standards. Secondly, it's not a workable solution to provide a waiver. It is appropriate if school districts are having particular issues or problems to work with the United States Department of Agriculture to create the flexibility that we've already provided. So, for example, when school districts said to us the whole pasta requirement is just not working. The food processing industry has not yet created that a whole wheat pasta that actually is cooking properly and is tasting properly. Well, we said, fine, let's give the industry another year to get that right. So we have created flexibility. And we've also provided financial assistance, and some of the schools in Alabama have taken advantage of this financial assistance, to have the equipment that would allow them to produce food on site, to get technical assistance, to figure out how to work within the budget, work within the new reimbursement that is available to schools that are certified, using techniques that are research-based to make it such that kids enjoy these meals and gravitate towards them. So there are many ways to deal with the issues that the chairman has said is occurring in some Alabama schools. without having to have a waiver, which we think would be a significant step backwards.
When you said it was unworkable, do you mean that the Department of Agriculture literally doesn't have the manpower to accomplish that? Is that what you meant?
Well, it's not so much that. It's that I'm sure that the school districts are going to want to surrender the information about their financial circumstances to the United States Department of Agriculture to basically provide the basis for saying, hey, we can't do this because of financial reasons. And the reason for that is that many superintendents throughout the United States are taking money from the food budget in order to balance the overall school budget. And I think that process and that action would be exposed in all of this. I just don't think school districts really understand what this would mean. I would be very surprised if superintendents and principals of schools are really interested in having the United States Department of Agriculture say, let's take a look at your books and let's verify that you indeed are having financial difficulty of complying when 84% of the schools in the state of Alabama and over 92% of the schools in the entire country are certified and qualified. And in fact, there's more revenue in the system than there ever has been. The revenue since the passage of the law has increased to school districts across the nation by $200 million.
Some of the critics of this law are citing the high level of waste that's occurring. They're saying that a lot of these vegetables are getting thrown out, something like 60%. I don't know where they got that figure. I'm not sure if that's accurate or not, but that's what I saw. Is that accurate, and would that be a genuine concern?
That is not accurate. There's actually been a study conducted by Harvard on whether or not there has been additional school waste or additional food waste after the passage and implementation of this law. And what the study indicated was that there's no more waste than there was before the law was passed. Food waste is an issue that isn't just an issue discussed in terms of schools. The reality is that 30% of food prepared in this country is wasted. For whatever reason, it may be wasted because portion sizes are too big in a restaurant and people just can't eat it all. It may be wasted because folks look at the best buy date or use by date and feel that the day after that date they gotta discard the food when it's still perfectly safe. It may be that folks are not using the recycling opportunities and the composting opportunities that are presented effectively. But at the end of the day, 30% of all food in this country is wasted. So it's not unusual to see some food waste in schools, but it is not any greater than it was before the passage of this law, and I think that's a spurious claim that really is not valid.
Why do you think it has crept up then? I mean, what do you think the impetus is for bringing this up if you think it is such a bad idea?
Well, I think that there are some rural schools in particular that are faced with declining school populations and having a harder and harder time with budgets generally, this is an opportunity for them to try to avoid a situation where they perceive that they're going to have an additional burden, when in fact, if they look at what 84% of schools in Alabama are already doing, or the 92% of schools in the United States are already doing, they're going to find that they can do this within the reimbursement levels that are being fixed by the government. There are local and regional food systems that can provide the food. There are equipment grants that can make it easier for you to produce the food on site. They just need to be focused on the solution and not try to avoid what is important for our kids, which is healthier meals. I mean, the reality is 35% of your kids in Alabama obese, overweight, 25% of your kids in food insecure homes. We are relegating these kids, if we don't start paying attention to these issues, to a lifetime of chronic diseases. We're relegating them to limited choices. We're relegating them to a situation where they may not learn as well at school because they're concerned about their self-image or they're just plain hungry and therefore can't concentrate as much. I mean, there's pretty good data that shows that kids who don't eat breakfast don't perform as well in school as kids who do, which is why it's important for us to continue focusing on providing access to these meals and making sure that they're as nutritious and as healthy as possible.
What about the whole thing about the pizza being counted as a vegetable? We've heard that. Well, kind of silly.
That's Congress basically using its political judgment in place of what nutrition experts and dietitians would tell you. You know, they basically provided in the law that pizza and tomato sauce was going to count as a vegetable. You know, and that, I think, underscores what happens when you allow politicians to make decisions that dietitians and pediatricians ought to be making. And that's why when we set these rules up and the standards up, we went to the experts, we went to the dietitians, we went to the nutrition experts, we went to the pediatricians and said, what should we be doing for our children that we're not doing? What should we be doing more of? What should we be doing less of? And they were very clear about this, very clear. Too much sodium, too much fat, too much sugar, not enough fruits and vegetables, not enough whole grains, not enough low-fat dairy. We went to chefs and we went to the experts in the food preparation world and said, look, if you got $2.80 or whatever the reimbursement level is, what could you do with that? And how would you make these meals tasty? We went to experts in terms of behavioral science, and we said, what could we do in the lunchroom to make it easier for kids to make the right choice? And we have lots of techniques, lots of technology, lots of equipment opportunities and grants, lots of strategies that folks can use. They just simply don't and shouldn't seek a waiver. What they should be doing is taking advantage of all this opportunity that we're creating to improve the meals for their school, for their kids.
With respect to you, obviously, you've talked about the role of politicians, and you say that you guys have gone to the experts and all of that. But essentially, this is coming out of the administration, which is, of course, is a body of politicians, essentially.
Let me just stop you right there. That's not right. The reason it's not right is that the rulemaking process, you know, these standards are established by rules. And the rulemaking process basically involves, first and foremost, us going out to experts and saying, craft and give us guidance as to what this rule, what these standards should be. So these are standards that were based on the Institute of Medicine's recommendations to us, and trying to align them consistent with the dietary guidelines that are established by a panel of experts, number one. Number two, we provide comment period. We basically put out the proposal and say, hey, what do you all think of this? So folks had plenty of time to come in fact, months and indeed years to come in and saying, hey, this is a problem or this is an issue or this is how we'd like to see it tweaked or whatever. And we made certain adjustments based on those comments. And then at that point, they become implemented. So it's not us sitting in a room making these decisions. It's us going to experts saying, what should we do? And it's us basically saying to those who will have to implement these rules, what do you think of this before they're actually finalized?
Well, no, I get what you're saying. But then ultimately, like we talked about with the pizza thing, it went before Congress and the rules got implemented by politicians. And so now that is the rule for the entire country.
Well, there's a directive from Congress to consider a certain thing, you know, pizza sauce as a vegetable. Okay. They ultimately have the ability to do that, and that's why this debate is so important, because we want to make sure that their judgment, which oftentimes is based on political reasons, is not substituted in this particular circumstance for, A, what experts have established, and B, what a majority of people in this country and a vast majority of schools are actually doing and supporting.
All right. Hey, Secretary Filsack, I appreciate it. Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye.